The following paid program is furnished by Dr. Steve Pettirudi. It's for basic entertainment and informational purposes only and is solely responsible for its content. It does not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, its management, or its staff. News Talk 630 and 99.7 FM WPRO presents Intellectual Medicine with Dr. Pettirudi. Join Dr. Pettirudi as he guides people towards living the 120 lifespan while retaining youth. He'll apply logic, reason, and scientific evidence to address conditions that drain people of their joy and vitality while protecting people from the harmful aspects of conventional medicine. Now, here's Dr. Steve Pettirudi.
Good morning, everybody. I am here. It's Dr. Steve Pettirudi along with Shannon. Welcome to Intellectual Medicine, the most compelling hour on radio here, WPRO. Good morning, Shannon.
Good morning.
How are you feeling today?
Great.
And Nick, how are things behind the glass, buddy?
Pretty good over here.
You're in charge, huh?
I am.
And we've got a special guest today, don't we, Nick?
We do today.
We have Chief McCartney from the Warwick Police Department. We'll be talking later in the show about the opioid epidemic and some really novel ideas on how to stem the tide. But before we get to that, we always like to lead off with some good news highlights, right? We love living in Rhode Island. It's the most beautiful state in the Union, even though it's a little bit drizzly out there. And you know what's happening today, Shannon? Today, all over the state, thousands of citizens are rolling up their sleeves and getting their hands dirty, cleaning it up. This is Earth Day, and all over volunteers, and we're saluting you for your great efforts, getting involved and cleaning things up. It's a proactive use of time. You know, I sometimes get tired of folks complaining about what's wrong, what's bad. And so few people actually are endeavoring to improve things. And this is a great example of folks getting together. I love Earth Day, you know, putting it together like that.
It's great. It should be more than once a year.
You know,
why is it not just once a year?
Well, you know what? Why don't we have intellectual medicine cleanup days?
Okay.
We can do that, right, Nick?
I like that idea.
Nothing is stopping us.
Exactly.
You know? Okay, so I want to contrast that. They're marching for science, too, right?
They are.
Now, Nick, who is against science? Is there a march out there against science?
I don't think so, but I'm sure there's a march against anything, for everything.
They're marching for science.
Now, somebody's offended about science.
I like science, right? I like my science teacher, Mr. Donovan from junior high school. He's a cool guy. Everybody liked their science teacher.
They did. Science was fun.
Who didn't like Bunsen burners? Come on.
Right?
Who didn't like all those science experiments? Come on.
Test tubes and Bunsen burners.
It was a fun hour of school.
Absolutely. Until they threw me out of science lab for lighting the Bunsen burners on fire. But that was a reckless era for me. But the march against science, you know what's going to happen, Nick? All those people that are cleaning up for Earth Day, they're going to have to follow the March for Science people and clean up the mess they leave behind with their coffee cups and their placards.
Are they marching with, like, paintbrushes and garbage bags? Like,
that'd be good. You know, let's do... I'm just tired of the marches to nowhere for nothing. I'm going to sponsor a march for nothing. It'll be the people's march just because we want to take a walk.
Why do I feel like that would be a very successful walk?
Just to get out there. Now, march for nothing. Well, here's the subtext, folks, in the March for Science. It has to do with intellectual arrogance. The idea that you people, you morons, you commoners, are just not listening to the scientists. If you would just shut up and do what they say, roll up your sleeve and get your HPV immunization, right? Cut down on your global warming, you polluting morons. Turn off your TVs. If you just listen to them, everything would be fine, right? People march when they feel threatened. And the reason scientists feel threatened is the same reason doctors feel threatened, is the same reason big hospitals feel threatened. It has to do with the revolution of the internet and the access of information to the common man. You know, once upon a time, nobody could read about this stuff except for those that had special access, right? If you're a patient and you're afflicted with dementia or you're afflicted with Lyme disease, we'll be talking about that later in the show, you had to listen to the expert, right, Shan? You had no choice.
That's right.
Remember the days you go to see the doctor and he's sat there and just dispensed knowledge?
Yeah, and you believed it.
I can remember attempting to research medical topics, spending hours in the library, going through that Dewey Decimal System.
Oh, microfiche.
Microfiche. Looking for the article, right. Pulling it out. People, like, all the young people go, what? Micro what? So the point here, folks, is that today I can rifle through 100 articles in about an hour, pick out the most important ones, and educate myself. And you know what? So can you. But connect the dots here. They're feeling threatened because you are making your own conclusions about the data you are reading. And in some cases, they don't like your conclusions.
No. Well, it makes them think. Now they have to do research.
Well, and then they've got to defend positions that are sometimes not fully defendable, you know. And look, I'm not against science, and we're all in favor of research, but we're, please, you folks marching for science, please, get off the street and get back into your lab. That's where you belong.
We need answers.
We need answers. We don't need people marching around in circles. Oh, boy, it drives me nuts. But some other good news. It's Earth Day. People are cleaning up. And I want to give a good news intellectual medicine award to actually House Speaker Nick Mattiello for proposing a line item veto. Now, he was against the line item veto in part of his political positions, but this is a sign of a statesman, folks, when you are willing to put forth an idea that perhaps you didn't originally agree with because, upon reflection, it may have merit. Now, some people call that a flip-flop. Hey, he's flip-flopping. As if to process new information and come up with a different decision is bad? How's that bad, Shannon?
I don't see it. I don't get it.
I don't get it.
No, because you're not standing your ground, right? Isn't that how it is now? You pick a side and that's it.
Yeah. When did that ever become a virtue? When did being stiff and rigid become a virtue versus saying, you know what, I hear what you're saying. This is information I can use. So to Nick Mattiello, whether or not it goes forward, I applaud the idea of studying it. I like the notion of a line item veto. I think it would be helpful to Rhode Island to stem some of the hemorrhaging dollars that are being spent here. But we wanted to link together a few things. You know, in intellectual medicine, we advocate for the 120-year lifespan. We advocate for living better, living well, and part of that goes to your financial health. Somebody under financial duress has difficulty living well, every basic from food to shelter just to the daily worry. Am I going to make it through the week? The biggest issue facing Rhode Islanders is the access to high-quality, high-paying jobs, period. That's what we want, and we've got to think about what's getting us there and how did we end up being one of the worst states in the union for business climate. It didn't happen by one moment. It happened by linking together different things. So the unemployment stats in Rhode Island, the unemployment rate went down, right? But what's wrong with that? And so Governor Raimondo took great credit and pride in the fact that the unemployment stats went down. Let me tell you, folks, that's like me standing on the beach and celebrating the fact that I made the sun come up. Just happened to be there when it occurred. Had nothing to do with me being on the beach, right? So taking credit for that, do you take credit for the fact that behind that stat, there were 700 jobs lost in Rhode Island in the last interval? The stat for unemployment went down, but jobs created and supplied in Rhode Island went down. Now, pay attention, because these things link up. How am I doing? Do I have time to make all this link? I'm doing well. All right, at least with time. Tax deals in Providence going bad. These are the special tax deals that the powerful and connected can twist out of local governments for the privilege of doing business within their jurisdiction. We opened up intellectual medicine. What was that? We got a tax deal.
Wow, we didn't.
No tax deal for us.
Nope.
Now, if a business in Providence or Warwick or Newport or anywhere gets a special tax break for doing business in that town, it is anti-competitive, it is anti-capitalistic, and it is unfair to every other business that doesn't receive the same break, because you're shifting the tax burden to those who are actually paying the tax. How is that right or fair? And that is a failing policy that will collapse, and what's happening in Providence is that they're not adhering to their deal. Blue Cross came in promising jobs. 15% of those jobs are now moving out of the city of Providence. Oops, our bad. Well, you know, we intended to keep them there, but thank you for the $24 million tax break you gave us. $24 million tax break to Blue Cross, and now they're shifting jobs out of Providence. Well, shame on the idiots that gave them the tax break in the first place.
And shame on those that aren't going after them. They're right. Not going after them get it.
They're not going after them because the deal was terrible to begin with, and it had no backup. It had no teeth. So you've got these tax deals. They're called cutouts. Now, link in this ridiculous sick leave bill that they want to pass in Rhode Island. Do you realize? So here's the deal, folks. In Rhode Island, we have temporary disability insurance. It is a beautiful thing, and it has helped salvage many people from calamity. We're one of the few states that takes care of its workers by virtue of temporary disability insurance. If you're out of work for 1 week, you will get a check week two, help support you. Now, the state wants the employers to pay a week, more than a week per year of paid sick leave. Now, here's the catch. As an employer, you don't have to tell them. You just don't show up. They have to pay you. And here's another catch. Not only for sick, but if you are being stalked by your boyfriend, you can take out of work. And not only that, but your friends can do it, too, to support you. So picture you're at work. You're an electric boat. And your boyfriend's giving you a hard time. Look, we're against all of the evil of domestic abuse, but let's separate these issues, right? Why should that be an employer-related phenomenon that requires paid leave? It's beyond me. Hey, the safest place to be if you're being stalked is at work, right?
It is.
Safest place to be. Right. I'm being stalked by my boyfriend. I need to go to Block Island for a week. Then your friends can take time off, so one stalking can get 10 people out of the workplace.
Stalking vacation.
A stalking vacation. This, folks, is ridiculous. It's a solution looking for a problem. It is politicians spending the money of hardworking businessmen to make themselves look good. It is another step down the stairs into the basement of an abysmal business environment that will corrode the mental, physical, and financial health of Rhode Islanders. When you tack it onto these tax deals, the Rhode Island economic health is going down with these type of decisions. What we need, look, I respected Governor Raimondo for having the guts to reform the retirement. You know, whether or not you agree with the outcome, it needed to be done. Now she's buckling. She's giving in to national interests that are promoting issues like free college tuition. That was not her interest. It's being paid for and promoted by national interests. They're using Rhode Island as a test vehicle to see if this issue is going to win them votes in a bigger election. They don't care about Rhode Island, but we do. We're Intellectual Medicine. We'll be right back with Chief McCartney from the Warwick Police Department. Stay with us, folks.
One, two, three.
Yeah, baby, we are back. Dr. Pederuti, this is Intellectual Medicine, talking about the people, the state we love, how to keep you alive, keep you well, and keep you thriving. And on the line, we have Chief of Warwick Police, Chief Steve McCartney. Welcome to Intellectual Medicine, Chief McCartney. Thank you for being with us.
Good morning, Doctor. How are you this morning?
Well, we feel great. We feel great. We're concerned, as you are, about the epidemic of opioid use, and we thought we'd open up a conversation this morning with you. As you know, we spoke off air yesterday about the new regulations that were put forth by the Department of Health to help guide or instruct physicians on how to prescribe opioids. The intent is to limit access to drug. Now, I read an interesting study, Chief, that showed that folks who have surgery, 6% of them, 9 months postoperatively, are still filling a prescription for their opioid, compared to 1% of the general population when they have any type of an acute injury. I would say that surgery itself is a risk factor for introducing people to opioids that then they become addicted to. And I've heard this story from many people. Boy, I was fine, and then I took that drug, and it took me over. Now, you were part of the conversation to come up with those regulations. Is that correct?
Yes, I was. I have attended the meetings where at the governor's task force where these changes were announced, and certainly law enforcement is a partner in that task force.
Now, in your work, in your police work, do you very often, or have you come in contact with the misdirection of legitimately prescribed opioids? You know, people are stealing them, people are using them for the sake of their addictive need.
Yes, and there's a lot of sad stories out there. I went to a wake one time involving a friend of mine. In fact, he was a retired officer, and his son suffered a very serious sports injury. And as a result of the post, just as you described, trying to heal from that injury, he got hooked on a painkiller and ultimately overdosed and died.
Oh,
and it was probably one of the saddest wakes I've ever gone to, because this kid was an all-American boy.
Yep.
He imbued every great quality that you could think of that you would want.
Well, you know, Chief, I would sympathize with that, but I want to extend it. There's not a person on the earth who deserves the fate of being addicted nor dying from addiction, and you and I agree on that.
Right.
And, you know, there's not a doctor on the planet that would willfully well, they're rare breed that would willfully do harm. And I want to give thanks to you and to those who put together these regulations. Here's how they are going to help doctors and ultimately patients. Right, Shannon? It can be really difficult, Chief, when a patient is staring you in the eye and saying, but I'm in so much pain, doctor.
Right.
And the doctor's feeling the pressure of wanting to satisfy a patient need, along with the time pressure of having to move things along. Fine, I'll give you 30 or 40 Vicodin. How's it going to hurt? Well, now we've got the leverage of saying, you know, I'd like to, but the state regulation is such that I can't. That's going to actually help docs who otherwise kind of feel that kind of patient pressure. And limiting access will diminish the addiction. I believe will diminish addiction, though time will tell on that one. So, yeah, kudos to the Department of Health for these regulations and to you for being part of it.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the first issues that was raised at the meeting. And I know that, obviously the meeting was primarily involved, personnel from the medical community. And I didn't hear anybody complaining about it. I think they understood that that was an issue that needed to be confronted.
Yep, we got
our kudos to everybody involved.
We got our tickets in the mail the other day, right, Shannon? Giving us these guidelines on a laminated card. I love
That's
it.
That's right. It was great. Good.
All right, but let's move on now. What about Portugal? I think we should decriminalize drugs. Now, in Massachusetts, you're aware of that whole fiasco where they screwed up the evidence and 22,000 criminals or prisoners are being set free because of tainted evidence. Now, you've been following that story, no doubt.
Right, in Massachusetts.
Now, they said, but don't worry, John Q. Public, these folks weren't dangerous to begin with, which raises the question then, the hell are they doing in prison to begin with? Aren't we imprisoning too many people for mental illnesses and medical concerns? In Portugal, they fully decriminalized drug use. And whenever somebody is encountered with a drug-related issue or offense, they are forced into treatment. They don't go to prison. Wouldn't that be a great thing for Rhode Island to do?
Well, it's certainly something that probably has to be considered. Of course, being a law enforcement officer, you look at the full spectrum of the, when you bring into an action, what is the result?
Sure, the unintended consequence, right.
And, of course, being in the profession that we're in, we look at it because I have heard that argument before that we should decriminalize. And certainly, for example, we did it with marijuana. Now, I can remember going on radio with Dan York, and I said, Dan, this decriminalization of marijuana was a big, big discussion and a big argument. For me, it really wasn't a big argument because I really think the courts were already taking a position, for example, when they were dealing with possession of marijuana cases, and I pointed it out because I gave Dan some of our statistics, and I had checked with our prosecution officer what was going on with these cases, and basically they were being filed, providing that individual would not come before,
right.
Which now, really meant that
So it's nice they were gentle. Yeah. But they weren't being forced into treatment.
Well, I didn't think that was such a bad idea.
Right, but it wasn't happening. I hear what you're saying. That is, the courts are gentle in this regard, but
which is good.
It's good, but they have latitude, and they don't always have to be gentle. And if you're a third-time offender, you could land in prison. And in fact, if you don't have good legal representation, you're more likely to land there. Thus, the discrimination against the poor and the ethnic minorities in regard to drug. Hey, Chief, can you stay with us a little while?
Sure.
Great, because we need to take a break, but I do want to come back and talk about this a bit more with Chief McCartney, Warwick Police. Next up, Doug Lizette from the News Center, WPRO.
News Talk 630 and 99.7 FM, WPRO presents Intellectual Medicine with Dr. Pettirudi. Join Dr. Pettirudi as he guides people towards living the 120 lifespan while retaining youth. He'll apply logic, reason, and scientific evidence to address conditions that drain people of their joy and vitality while protecting people from the harmful aspects of conventional medicine. Now, here's Dr. Steve Pettirudi.
Hello, Rhode Island. We are back. I am Dr. Pettirudi. This is Intellectual Medicine on WPRO, the voice of Southern New England. Having a conversation with Shannon And with Nick and with Chief McCartney from the Warwick Police Department, we're talking about drug addiction, opioid overdose, and what we can do to help stem the problem. The state of Rhode Island Department of Health recently placed restrictions on the amount of opioids that can be prescribed for acute pain. Yeah, acute pain is a serious issue. I had a kidney stone once, and thank God for whatever they gave me in the ER. Huh, Shan? What was it? A little hydromorphone.
Was hysterical. From my perspective, it was you thought, after a couple doses, you just wanted to get up and leave because you weren't in pain anymore.
I was feeling pretty good.
You were.
Oh, boy. But, you know, we just heard from Ed from Johnston, who shared his story where he had shoulder surgery, was on an opioid, and just chose to stop it and cope with some of the residual pain. And I do think that the existence of pain is an inevitable phenomenon of being alive, and that dealing with some of that is part of what we need to be able to process. But back to the public policy and back to Chief McCartney. Chief, thanks for holding on air while we were over the commercial break. But, you know, we were talking a moment ago, Chief, about the decision in Portugal. They had rampant drug abuse and death from overdose, and they shifted their strategy to one of decriminalizing the drugs for the user. They still go after the dealers, and instead of going into a court system upon being arrested or being found, they go directly into forced treatment. They have clean needle programs. The rate of death from addiction has plummeted. Tell me what happens if a police officer in Warwick encounters somebody that they believe to be intoxicated with drugs. What happens? How do they interact with that person?
Well, most of the time, it's probably going to happen at a traffic stop.
Okay.
And I think that's the number one concern right now, the police chiefs, when you're talking about the whole legalization issue, is that, for example, with marijuana, there's no legally recognized mechanism that assists us in the investigation to determine the impairment.
But doesn't a police officer have training? Could they not give a field sobriety test that would be?
Well, they do that. I mean, yeah. I can tell you that the law in the state of Rhode Island is very, very step by step. It's very systematic.
Okay.
And if one step is out of place, the case gets dismissed.
So let me shift to my guy now. And let's make it a gal. Let's not be sexist,
yep.
Right? So there she is. She's weaving in traffic. You pull her over. She doesn't have alcohol, but you find in her possession some cocaine.
I think initially what you're doing is you're dealing with the impairment issue. Okay? I know where you're going with this, but the initial question is the impairment. She was out there driving the motor vehicle.
Yep.
Okay? Now you go through the steps. If you see that she can come out and go through the field sobriety tests, you put them through that. And maybe initially you might even find that I don't know what this person is impaired from. I mean,
right, but
the
remember,
search may come later on.
Remember, in this scenario, there's cocaine that was found.
I'm getting to that.
Okay.
I haven't forgotten about that, but you got to focus on one thing at a time here, okay? Because she's not going anywhere.
Okay,
nothing's going anywhere that you unless you want to change the scenario.
Okay.
But you put them through the test. You got probable cause now to bring her into the station. Okay, you bring in there. Okay, now you set aside. You may then, at that point in time, find the drugs. But the other thing that I just want to point out to you is that when you initially bring them in, you may say, okay, maybe it's drugs. Then maybe now the officer has the decision to make, am I going to bring them to the station or am I going to bring them to the hospital?
Right.
Okay, there to bring them, because now you're going to have to do a blood draw.
Okay.
With the hospital, if you think that it's impairment by drugs, you need to deal with the impairment issue first.
So those issues,
the possession issue, is you're going to deal with that later on.
And those issues, the impairment issues, are universal. They would occur whether or not the drugs are decriminalized or not. You still have an impairment
issue that supersedes it. But that's the major concern of law enforcement right now.
Right.
And I can remember having this argument with a gentleman one time who argues, he came before the Rotary, and I listened to him, and he wanted to ask me later on what I thought. He wanted to draw me into a little bit of discussion, and I told him, I said, well, let's just talk about alcohol for a minute. Back in the 30s, we had Al Capone, and we had the shootings and all the craziness that went on, and then all of a sudden, we legalized alcohol. Okay, did that eliminate the problem entirely? Absolutely not. It just shifted the problem in a different direction.
So I agree with you. We are going to have the issue of impaired driving, whether it's marijuana, cocaine, or anything.
It is, and you're still putting considerable resources from a law. Here again, I'm coming from a law enforcement perspective here, because now you're going to have more people out there. Granted, you're going to have more treatment available, which is good if they accept it. Now, here again, you know. Treatment is basically voluntary, unless you arrest them.
And
I may take a different point of view there, because I've had this discussion in several different venues, and I said, you know, sometimes you need to have that hammer in the background, because when you have somebody that, you know, continues to put themselves in harm's way and at risk and put other people at risk.
Yep.
And maybe arrest is the only thing that's going to put this person in a situation whereby he's looking at a judge.
Well, you know,
the judge says, I'm putting you in a program, and you know what? We're going to have periodic reviews.
Yeah. I respect that opinion immensely, but here's the intellectual medicine bill that Shannon wants to propose, right?
What is that?
We got
a good argument going here.
Right.
We need input from professionals like you.
It's the docs.
I have to tell you, Chief, you are a Rhode Island original. I want to thank you for being on this show. And, you know, I know you're a guy that is passionate about your love for Rhode Island, and your opinion carries weight because it has no agenda other than what's best for Rhode Islanders. And I wish you 120 youthful years, my friend. We need you on the scene.
Well, I appreciate it, Doc. Thank you very much.
Hey, Chief. Well, thanks for being with us. We'll leave you with those wise words from the Chief, which is, regardless of this is decriminalized or not, the work of law enforcement will persist, and the need to protect the public will be there forever. And good fortune for us that we've got people like you at the helm, Chief. Thanks. But a final thought here, Shannon, then we're going to talk with John in Portsmouth for a moment. And folks, stay tuned. We are going to be shifting and talking about Lyme disease, as we promised, and it'll carry over into the Big Blue Bug Show. But really, we can decriminalize this. Everything the Chief said can still occur. They can be forced into treatment by virtue of a change in the law. They don't need to go to jail. That's where we're wasting money.
But the problem is, you force them into treatment, they come out, and they keep doing it.
Yeah, but it's a chronic relapsing disease, so the treatment goes on, just as if they had other medical disorders. I think, you know, we medicalize this, we go after the dealers, and we stop this. You know, you could go by, look at those street people. Half of those folks have to be addicted.
Oh, I know.
Why not be able to intervene, get them into the treatment that they need? This would have global benefit. But we have John from Portsmouth up next. John, you're on Intellectual Medicine with Dr. Pedderudi. Welcome.
Good morning, Doctor. How are you?
I'm great.
I run by you and just tell you, I've probably smoked cannabis for 55 years now, sir.
Yep.
And that's not what my main concern is. My main concern is this. Back, I have been in the medical field. I've worked in the emergency room. I've seen my share of deaths from drug overdoses. I've seen my share of deaths from alcohol overdoses, opiate overdoses, accidents, all the results of impaired driving. So my story is, I became infected. I got infected with a very painful disease, and I was put on anti-inflammatories. I was put on Vicodin. I had Oxy for these pains. And I began to notice that if an occasional smoking some cannabis, I was able to go a lot further between my opiates but my fear was, this is great. I'm not going to be the one that gets addicted.
Yep.
What's going to happen is, I'm going to make sure that I do these things not in the prescription format. eventually, because of the medical marijuana program in this state,
yep.
I am opiate-free. I am anti-inflammatory free.
Right.
Okay. And I'm a responsible person who has never been arrested. And you know what my big fear was?
What's
my
that?
Big fear was the fact that the only thing I did, I was breaking the law.
So, John, now you're opioid free. You're a responsible yes. citizen. You've smoked marijuana.
Since I got out of the Navy.
Yep. Thank you. Thanks for your service, brother. Listen, but you're I have a question. Are you still using marijuana on a daily basis?
No. What I do is yes, I'm sorry. I take a dose in the morning.
Yep.
And then it's usually an edible, okay?
Right.
But I do have a device that right. delivers a immediate
John,
amount.
John, I have another question. Do you know how many milligrams of THC you consume when you take that edible? Is it listed on your product?
No, because I bake my own.
Right. Now, I like the fact that we are moving away from criminalizing marijuana. One of my concerns, John, is I believe it should be regulated the way alcohol is. You should know the milligram amount that goes in so you can control the amount of effect neurologically.
Yes, you should.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm fully for control,
yep.
for legalization, and do what you did with alcohol. You know, I wish yeah. everybody, you know, and I know they consider it a gateway drug, Doc, but to me it was a yeah. gateway drug off of those things.
John, you know what? You're speaking with wisdom and experience. Thank you for calling in. And, you know, we'll be back, folks. But, you know, a gateway drug is such that it introduces you to a dealer. When it's legal, there's no dealer involved. Anyhow, the conversation will continue. This is Dr. Pedderuti at Intellectual Medicine. You're listening to WPRO. Stay tuned.
WPRO has your chance to win a family four-pack of tickets to WPRO's night at McCoy Stadium. Watch the Paw Sox take on the Gwinnett Braves on Friday, April 28th at 6:05 p.m. Listen all day for your chance to win.
All right, I am back. It's Dr. Pedderuti. You know, and if you can't get enough of me and Intellectual Medicine, I'm going to be sticking around, Shannon. For the Tony DeJesus
Big Blue Bug
Show.
I know. I mean, you know, like, twist your arm. He's been working on for weeks.
It's going to be fun. We're going to be talking about Lyme disease, and it's going to be a unique format. We'll be talking about it both from the medical as well as the environmental and preventative perspective. So stay with us. This is real science in action, folks. We're not out there marching in circles, by golly. This is what, you know, we were just talking with Chief McCartney. Thanks again. And we were talking with a call-in was Paul, right, from John. Thanks. It was John who was generous enough to call in and share his story about the way in which he's been able to manage himself in a very responsible and healthy approach using medical marijuana for many, many years. We advocate for maximum freedom at every curve in the road, even if there are issues such as medical marijuana that have potential to do harm depending on how it's applied. It's the responsibility of a free citizen to gather information and apply it to their health as they see fit. To do that, we need good information from reliable sources. That's why Intellectual Medicine exists, so that we can help deliver this kind of care in a balanced manner. Now, Shannon, with talking about sources of information, would you say that you would be in favor of a safe medicine for America?
Ooh, in favor of it.
Yeah.
I mean, how would you not be in favor of
the
it?
The Partnership for Safe Medicine. Sounds good, right?
Of course. Who doesn't like safe medicine?
Join that partnership. Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out, folks, that there's an issue brewing that you need to know about regarding importing drugs from Canada. Now, the reason to import drugs from Canada is to save money and make drugs available and affordable for people who need them. But the Partnership for Safe Medicine is concerned. They're worried that these drugs can cause death and harm.
Or cut into their profit.
Well, it turns out that if you look underneath the surface, the people funding the Partnership for Safe America, which is a not-for-profit entity that purports to be a grassroots organization, are getting a huge chunk of their money from Big Pharma. Aren't we shocked? Big Pharma has found a way. This is like the mafia laundering money. They're hiding it from you so that they can promote an issue without their fingerprints being on it.
How safe do they think our drugs
Well, you know, right. So that's a good point.
Come on.
The drugs coming in from Canada have to be FDA cleared manufacturing. They're making it sound like they're brewing it up in a witch's hut, you know, in sub-Sahara Africa and shipping it in like on the back of donkeys in the night.
But it's not like ours are so safe. Look how many get pulled all the time.
Well, you know, drugs themselves are questionable in their efficacy, mm-hmm. and their benefits are usually exaggerated, and their risks are diminished. And that is very profit-driven. At Intellectual Medicine, we advocate for the ability of the body to heal itself with proper support hormonally, nutritionally, intravenously if needed. And yeah, sometimes pharmacology is critical. Mm-hmm. It's got to be used judiciously. But here's the kicker. They are advocating for protecting us. Now, Shan, I've been at this game for 30 years. The next time I see somebody dying from a tainted Canadian drug will be the first. Right?
Right.
Have we read about this in the paper? Are there people just dying in South Providence because they took tainted Viagra from Canada? They immediately had a seizure and died. No! This is false information. It's being done to protect their profit. Right? So, I don't know. Maybe we should have the scientists march against false information. I don't know. We should get Sheldon Whitehouse to march against dark money. Isn't this an example
of
it?
Yeah.
You know, I saw an ad the other day touting Gina Raimondo's educational plan, the idea of welfare money for mediocre college students. That's what we call it in intellectual medicine, right? If you're a flunky and you want free money, Rhode Island's your place. And it was a nationally sponsored ad by a not-for-profit entity promoting this notion. And that is where they're using Rhode Island as an experimental bubble. Well, we are intellectual medicine, and we are the mecca for advancing lifespan and maintaining youthfulness. It started here in Humble, Rhode Island, and it'll be spreading out over the whole country. I'm Dr. Steve Pedrotti. Stay tuned for Big Blue Bug Solutions with Tony DeJesus and yours truly as I stick around and we talk about Lyme disease. Have a great week. Happy Earth Day, everybody.